So if you're interested in listening to great gospel music, tune in every Wednesday night between the hours of 10 p.m. and 12 midnight with your host, yours truly, Scotty Robinson, here on the Gospel Music Review on the only station making waves. That's 89.3 FM.
The holiday season is officially here, and WHFR would like to remind our listeners that the WHFR online store is open 24 hours a day to help you with your holiday shopping. If you or someone you know loves WHFR, we can't think of a better gift for them than one of our quality WHFR logo products. Choose from items such as t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, and much more. Some items on the site now feature our new limited edition logo, expressing your support for non-commercial independent media. These items will only be available for a limited time, so check out our online store today by visiting www.whfr.myshirtdesigner.com. Remember, every purchase from our online store helps us continue making waves. Thanks in advance for your support, and from our family to yours, have a great holiday season.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And I want to wish a Happy New Year to all of our loyal listeners out there, and even if you're tuning in for the first time, hopefully you'll become loyal listeners. And this is January 2011, and let's hope that this is a better year for all of us than years in the past. So we'll get right to it, because our guest today is Leslie Kane. Leslie is an independent investigative journalist who has been published nationally and internationally. She is co-author of Burma's Revolution of the Spirit, The Struggle for Democratic Freedom and Dignity, and was a producer and on-air host for a daily investigative news program on KPFA Radio. Kane began publishing on the UFO subject in the year 2000, when her feature story about the French Cometa Report appeared in the Boston Globe. In 2002, she co-founded the Coalition for Freedom of Information, an independent alliance advocating the greater government openness on information about UFOs and for responsible coverage by the media. Her latest book is UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. And it went straight to the New York Times bestsellers list, which is quite a feat for a book on the UFO topic. And the book includes a foreword by John Podesta, President Clinton's former chief of staff. First-person contributions written by highly credible military and government officials from nine countries, including five generals. So here to tell us about her book is Leslie Kane. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Hi, David. It's great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you. I read the book, and it is, I would say, not just because you're the guest today, but it is one of the most informative and non-biased books on the UFO topic, because you're not really coming out and saying, UFOs are real. I mean, the extraterrestrial origin and, you know, wake up America. You know, you're just saying, here it is. Listen to these people.
Right. I mean, I'm really trying to just lay out, you know, what do we actually know about the phenomenon in terms of facts that really no one can argue with.
Right.
And, you know, as you mentioned, one way to do that was what I decided to do was to let these absolutely top, most authoritative people in the world on the subject speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I invited them to write their own chapters in the book. So it's not just me quoting people. It's actually our readers getting to read what these people have to say in their own words, and I think that's part of the power of the book. And you're right. I mean, we don't draw a lot of conclusions. Certainly the extraterrestrial hypothesis is proposed as a very likely, you know, explanation for the phenomenon, but
yeah.
I think everyone in the book agrees pretty much that we need more scientific investigation and more, you know, absolute proof of what it is. We just don't have the kind of proof that is needed to satisfy the scientists of the world.
Right.
And everybody in the book, these authorities, as you mentioned, five generals among them, really believe that we need to go about actively searching for that proof, for the answers that will, you know, allow us to determine what this thing is for sure, but we're not quite there yet.
Right. Well, we know, UFO, by definition, unidentified flying object. That's something is flying in our air, in our skies, that we can't readily identify. So we know that exists. But the problem is, mainstream science, I believe, at least their facade, is they take extraterrestrial hypothesis off the table. And it can't be taken off the table. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's two extremes. I think in one case, you have the sort of true believer types who assume that that is what UFOs are,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, they assume that the government has known it for 50 years, and all the things that, you know, people tend to believe about the subject, which indeed may turn out to be true, but when you go ahead and put that out there into the media, it's really just a matter of belief at this point, and it does put people off who are not ready to accept this.
Yeah.
And then on the other extreme, you have the debunking types, who, which I think is what you're referring to, are the people that just won't even put the extraterrestrial hypothesis on the table.
Right.
They just say they can't possibly be visitors from other worlds, and therefore they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
So it must be something else.
Yeah, so those are the two extreme positions, and what I've tried to do is sort of walk the road down the middle, not take either one of those positions, but really just lay out the facts in a way that I think makes them accessible to people in political office, to the scientific community, to
mm-hmm.
the policymakers who really are in a position to do something about this UFO mystery, and those are the people that I'm trying to reach through the book, so I was very careful to provide the kind of information that they would be able to find acceptable and not too threatening to their worldviews. It's pretty threatening to your worldview, though, actually, the book. Because
yeah.
there's no way around. You cannot read this book and be a denier anymore about
yeah.
you know what's going that there's something going on. But I'm just speaking very carefully to people who really don't know much about the subject and not asking them to go too out on a limb,
right?
But to really look at the case evidence that we have and to listen to what the authorities have to say about it.
Right.
And
well,
that's all I can ask people. They can draw their own conclusions.
I think a book like this will, if the skeptic / debunker will take a look at it, or those sitting on the fence will take a look at your book, it will open up doors and say, well, I don't know, but gee, this looks kind of compelling. Let's do a little bit more digging. And I think you've accomplished that for sure. Do you find that that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. And I think the key point, which you alluded to there, is getting these people to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if somebody is a real diehard debunker and they've heard that this book, you know, is pretty compelling and pretty hard to you know, it's going to be hard for them to maintain their position if they read it. I suspect a lot of them will just choose not to read it.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, my goal, I mean, so all I ask of people out there in this, who are on the fence, I mean, all I'm asking of people is not to agree with me, that, and I want people to know that I'm not drawing any conclusions about what this is. All I'm asking them to do is just read the book.
Yeah.
You know, just be willing to do that. And they can, if they want to maintain their position that they had before they read it, you know, I will completely respect anybody's position and opinion. But I would just like them to read the book first. I guess I don't feel like that's too much to ask of somebody.
I
would be willing to read any of their books that are making the case that UFOs don't exist.
Yes, well, I've read those too.
Yeah, and you know, so
and,
we've all got to read everybody else's information, and I just hope, I think that if anybody reads this book from start to finish, any debunker reads it, they're going to be in trouble. I do think some of them won't read it.
I had a relative once say to me, you know, even if this is real, I don't want to know. And I was taken aback by that. But, you know, the polls show that there's a lot of people, like 10 to 15% of people say, I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
You know, I kind of can relate to that, though. I can understand the desire. You know, this is just too shocking to my perceptions. It's too scary. I just want to continue to live my life day by day and not have to have something come into my reality that's going to turn everything upside down.
Right.
I mean, I can understand people that make that choice. That's different than saying they don't exist, though. You know what I mean? I mean, they're willing to say there may be something to it, but I don't want to be involved. I don't want to know about it. Fair enough. But when you say it's all bunk and there's no such thing as UFOs and they don't exist and there's no evidence, that's a different thing than just saying, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
Thank you and goodbye. So, I mean, that's fine. People have a right to choose what they want to think about.
I call that the ostrich syndrome.
Yeah, and I think everybody has a right to decide for themselves what they want to think about. I mean, it's just not fair when they dismiss it out of hand as not having any validity. They're two different perspectives, two different positions there.
There is no evidence, but I refuse to look at what evidence you have, you know?
Yeah, but if they want to say, okay, maybe there's some evidence, but I still don't want to look at it, that's fair enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, I ask this question a lot of my guests that have interviewed authorities like generals and people... who are near the president, like Podesta and what have you. And I'm going to ask you, with all of these generals and pilots and people in authority who have come forward with their sightings and their stories and their closeness, like those in the Disclosure Project and on and on and on, so many authorities have come forward. Would a presidential disclosure of the phenomenon be any more of official disclosure than has already happened, than is in your book?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think if I don't think this is going to happen, and I'm not asking for this to happen, but if what you're talking about is an announcement by the President of the United States there is a UFO phenomenon, is that what you mean by presidential disclosure?
Right, by presidential disclosure, you know, my fellow Americans, we are not alone in the universe. God bless America. Have a good night. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but
no.
At least anytime soon. But yes, I mean, I think that would definitely be a very different scenario from what I've got in the book. Absolutely, it would take everything to another level. I mean, I agree with you. There's already a lot of tremendous evidence and authorities that have come forward, but there hasn't been anything official in the United States anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing, not let alone the president, which of course would be the most significant, but even any other official in office coming out with any kind of statement about this, it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that would definitely be a lot more significant than anything we've had so far.
Yeah, but once we don't know
if and when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't know.
But if and when that does happen, once you open that door, that's a Pandora's box, because so many questions are going to come forward. You know, what about the abduction phenomena? What about this? What about that?
Exactly.
What are they here for? I don't know. Why can't you stop them? Well, I can't.
I know. I think that's the touchiest question, and that may be the reason why such an announcement isn't going to be made.
Yeah.
Really, because... you know, we don't know how they work. We don't know who, maybe we know more. I don't know, but we don't know how much our government might actually know about these craft.
We don't.
Or even the beings that are in the craft. But they certainly, you know, it's a, if they can't control them, which we have to assume they can't, that's not something they necessarily want to admit to the general public. So I can sort of see that that might be a reason why they don't talk about it.
Right.
And maybe there's a good reason for that. Who knows?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we're all not, we should stop working towards openness. I mean, I tend to believe that the more people know about reality, the better off they are. If it's real, you should know about it.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, it's a fascinating question, and it'll be fascinating to see how the whole thing plays out. It really will.
Yeah. I'm a believer in, you know, if it's real, you should know, you know, deal with it. But maybe, I'm sure they think a lot of people can't deal with it.
That's probably true, and the officials may be very concerned about scaring people. I mean, and not you know, America likes to feel powerful, that they're the most powerful country, you know, on the planet.
Yeah.
And do they really want to come out and say, hey, there are these things flying around, that they shoot beams down at the ground, maybe they abduct people, and we can't do anything about it?
Yeah, they're
you know,
not.
I don't think any government would want to say that.
Yeah, they're not in control, although France, you know, France,
well, it's true, and that's
Belgium.
One of the points I make throughout the book, is to compare, you know, the kinds of things that other countries are willing to state officially as compared to the United States. And also how other countries handle case investigations as compared to the United States.
Right.
So it's right. I mean, I think that's a really important point, that in other countries, when they have acknowledged that there has been a mysterious object over the country that they can't explain, you know, they cannot explain it, they don't know what it was, as happened in Belgium during the Belgium wave, the population did not panic, the stock market didn't crash, you know, people didn't buy guns and start, you know, panicking like they did during the Orson Welles broadcast. I mean, it has happened in other countries where governments have acknowledged something and people have not had this terrified reaction. So I don't think that people would panic that much, because polls also show that Americans accept this as being real.
Why,
so,
sure.
You know,
was it 60%?
Yeah, I don't know what the latest poll is, but I'm sure it's way more than 50% of the people.
Oh, yeah. I think it's 60% believe that, you know, there was a poll taken in Canada. Do you accept the fact that, you know, we're being visited by extraterrestrial beings?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 55 to 60%. And then a curious question was, do you think the government knows more than they're telling us about the UFO phenomena? And it was like 90% said yes.
Was that Canadian citizens or
Canadian citizens?
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
But so now that's a disparity, because, you know, if 90% say yes, the government knows more than they're telling us, but only 60% say they believe that they're real. There's a 30% discrepancy there. You know, you're not telling us something. You must think, you know, that 30% must think that they're real as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting poll. I mean, I think that if our government made some kind of announcement, it would depend a lot on how they said it and what they said, and if they were going to state that, you know, these things have been reported since the late 40s, or even earlier than that, really, but they became, you know, sort of in our consciousness in the late 40s in this country. And so far, nothing horrible has happened.
No.
You know, maybe people wouldn't be so frightened by it.
Right. I have to take a moment here to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with a journalist and author, Leslie Keene, author of UFOs, and I keep forgetting here, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. I keep wanting to say speak out, but it's pretty much the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it just sounds a little more journalistic to
yes,
say
it
go
does.
On the record.
Go
That's why
on
we like that title.
Tell us about the Cometa Report. What is the Cometa Report?
Okay, and that was so important for me, because it's what got me started in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cometa Report was a study made by French officials back in the mid-1990s. And that group of officials included mainly retired military people, but at very high levels. There were four generals involved. There was an admiral. There was the former head of the National Space Agency in France, which is the equivalent of our NASA. A chief of police also was involved, and many engineers and scientists. It was a group of about 13 very sophisticated people. And as I said, they studied the subject for about 3 years, looking at official cases only from around the world, and did many interviews with French pilots as well, and put together a report in which they put forth numerous cases which are of great importance, and analyzed the situation regarding UFOs. And they were really looking at this in terms of the national security issues. You know, it was called UFOs in Defense. What are we prepared for? They were concerned about the possible national security implications and the lack of preparedness that they know that pilots and militaries have in France and around the world for this, in dealing with UFOs. That was a concern. And what was really the most interesting thing to me about it was their conclusion. And again, we have to remember we're talking about generals, an admiral, and an advanced space expert here. They made the conclusion that the best and most logical and most likely hypothesis to explain the phenomenon was the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And to me, as a journalist, you know, seeing that conclusion being drawn by people at that level, I thought was a really big news story. I mean, I was just blown away when I got this report. And, you know, imagine if four American generals came out with a statement like that.
Really?
So that was what the Cometa report was. I think it was an historic report because it involved such a large group of people from one country at such high levels.
Right.
All coming together to do an official study of this. And their conclusions were also really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So that was a turning point for me, and I think historic for all of us that, you know, that the Cometa report was published. It was published in 1999 in France, and my Boston Globe story came out in the year 2000. That was my entree into the UFO world. Was that report?
So that was an eye opener for you, huh? So also,
it was an eye opener, and what's really been wonderful for me was the instigator of that report was a French general by the name of Denis Leti.
Okay.
He's a major general, actually, a two-star. And, you know, I've ended up meeting him twice, the first time in 2008, and I just returned from a trip to Europe about a week ago with a film crew in which I had the privilege of once again sitting down with him and talking with him. And, you know, it's just such a wonderful thing for me because when I first started in this reported on the Cometa report, you know, I never would have imagined that I ever would be sitting down with this general who I held in such high regard. And it's been really meaningful for me to get to know him better and to have had these two opportunities to sit down with him.
What was his story?
Well, he's an interesting gentleman, and for those who want to know more about him, he actually has written a chapter in my book, which I hope people will read, and he tells his own story about how he got interested in the subject. And he was a commander at various air bases back in the 70s. You know, again, he's a general. He's a very important figure within the French military. And he started hearing reports from pilots who had had these encounters with these objects. And some of them he knew personally. And he started becoming curious about it and interviewing these various people. And again, when you know them personally, and you know they're not making up stories, and you know that there's radar data and multiple witnesses, sometimes more than one pilot involved, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, these were actual experiences. These things were happening. So he became very concerned about it at that point. And one of the people he interviewed at that time was a pilot by the name of Jean-Pierre Fartek, who really kind of impressed General Leti greatly because he was so affected by his experience, which involves actually him seeing a UFO from his home that was hovering very close to the ground near these trees, not far from his house. He saw this thing with his wife, and he was very shaken by this. And General Leti had tremendous respect for Captain Fartek and went to his home, and they, you know, interviewed him, and Fartek drew him pictures and gave him lots of information and reported it to the airbase. And this recent trip to Europe that I went on with a film crew, I was fortunate to also meet Mr. Fartek for the first time. We went to his house. We saw the actual place where he had witnessed that UFO. the very trees are still there. This line of trees that where the thing was hovering, and we did an extensive interview with him, and that was also really meaningful for me because of General Leddy having been so impressed by him back in the 70s.
Right.
He's a really interesting man, General Leddy, and he very much wants answers about what this thing is, and certainly agrees with one of the premises of the book that a lot of the officials from other countries have made the point that the American government, they hope, will become more involved with this issue so that to help the rest of the world solve it, because it's very hard for these countries working independently to get far enough to really get to the bottom of what the UFO mystery is all about. And he's one of these people that's for decades has been focused on it, has been perplexed by it, and really wants greater knowledge and really wants to know what's going on, and hopes that the U.S. government will take a greater role in helping that process move forward.
Yeah. Tell us about John Callahan. He's quite a character. I think he has my sense of humor. And I read about his clip in your book there. And tell us what he witnessed.
Another man who wrote a chapter in the book, and he does have a great sense of humor. And he's very blunt and direct and no-nonsense kind of guy. I guess you like his phrase, who are you going to believe, your lying eyes or the government?
That's great.
That's one of his famous statements. And it's funny you brought him up, because just a couple of days ago I was down in Virginia with the same film crew interviewing him and getting together with him. So, he's a very important official in all of this, because he was head of the Accidents and Investigations Division of the FAA, which is a very, very prominent position back in the 1980s, probably number two or three from the very top of the whole FAA. And he was, during the time he was in that position, this Japan Airlines case occurred over Alaska, in which three pilots witnessed for 31 minutes a huge object and some smaller objects, and were chased around by this thing that was jumping around. And it was picked up on radar, and Callahan has all this data on the case, because when he retired, it was in his office, and they sent it home with him. So he has the official FAA report on it. He has the voice tapes, the cockpit voice tapes, that the pilot's conversation with the radar, with Anchorage radar control, and he's got the video of the radar returns, which has been synchronized with the voice tapes, and all kinds of charts that were used in meetings at the FAA to show, to plot the course of the UFO in conjunction with the aircraft. Lots of really fascinating data on this case, and it's just an amazing case, because the object was up there for so long and so much information on it was recorded. So that's his story, and he's very willing to express his kind of outrage and frustration with the fact that there's so much denial within the government and within the FAA about any of this, and nobody wants to deal with it. And he also believes that our radar systems need to be improved, and he has proposed ways in which we can improve the detection of UFOs. That it's very easy for them to slip by the radar for various reasons, which he does explain in his chapter. And he's a proponent of trying to improve the technology, which wouldn't be that difficult, just so that we can have greater chance of capturing more UFOs on radar.
From what I read, our radar is capable of picking up conventional objects because they move at a certain pace. But you can't pick up a UFO because they move so darn fast.
Exactly, and he was drawing, when I was just there a few days ago, he drew this diagram for us of what it looks like on a radar screen, and you might see one little dot show up, and if the thing's going really fast, it's going to be, within a second or two, it's going to be in another area which isn't covered by that particular controller's radar screen, because everybody's radar just controls a small area, and you have these radar stations all over the place. So the thing's moving quickly. You see one little dot and it's gone. No controller's going to pay any attention to it.
Right, right.
You have to be able to look at it moving across the country, and it just doesn't happen. Another, if they're very slow, he was saying also, if they're like massive hovering objects, they can often be written off as weather by these because that's what weather looks like on the on the screen. So, you know, that's another problem, that things just get handed off as weather when they're really not weather. Because they're, what they're looking for on their radar are airplanes, because that's what their job is. Their job is to manage the flow of traffic coming in and out of airports and in the skies. And so they're looking for airplanes, and they're not paying a lot of attention to things that don't fit the, you know, the natural movements and speeds and positions and all of that of aircraft.
Yeah. Wasn't the CIA supposed to have picked up all of this data and said this never happened?
That's what he, and again, we want to find, I really do want to find some other people that were at that meeting, and just want to, I haven't been able to spend the time that it takes to try and find those people, but the way Callahan reports it is that the CIA did confiscate the data at the meeting that he went to with them, but he had other copies. He already had copies of it. He had made copies of it before the meeting.
They didn't ask for that.
He remained in his office, so he ended up with copies of the same thing that the FIA, that the CIA, I'm sorry, did confiscate. And you're right; they told him this event never happened. You were never here, and we're taking all the data, and don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Callahan said, "Why can't we let the public know that there was a UFO?" And the CIA said, because it will panic them. We don't want to panic the public. And that's what Callahan reports happened at that meeting. And so he didn't talk about it until, you know, 15 years later or something like that, and when he just decided he was going to do it.
Well, it's not only the panic. I think it's the technology that they want to keep secret. Don't you agree?
Could be.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just reporting. I'm a reporter, so I just tell you what they, you know, that's what Callahan says. The CIA told him it was because of the panic thing, but I'm sure you're right. It's got to be more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But he describes them being very excited to have this data, and that he says that the CIA officials told him that they'd never had data on UFOs before that lasted for 31 minutes, and that they had. Which is interesting, because that implies that they did have some data.
Oh, yeah.
They might have had 2 or 3 minutes of radar tracings or something like that, but 31 minutes, they were very excited about that, apparently.
But it stayed pretty much in one place, didn't travel too far.
Yeah, I mean, there was a one huge, what, you know, even the pilot referred to it as a mothership of some sort, and there were these smaller things that came out and came closer to the plane, and it did move around. I mean, it would, and I don't know, maybe that was the smaller things. There was a number of objects that night that they saw, but some of them were really jumping, you know, sort of similar to what Parviz Jafari described in Iran, the things, you know, you look at it, and then 1 second later, it's 20 miles, it's jumped in a completely different position in relation to your aircraft.
Right.
And it's inconceivable that anything could move that quickly.
Well, that's it. You see, that can't possibly be, because we can't do that.
Right, and that's what is often reported by pilots when they're looking at these UFOs, that they move, they just, what they call it, more jumping, rather than even flying or moving, that in 1 second they're here, and then another second later they're over there.
Right.
And they don't even see the movement, it's just bing, bing.
But it's the same mindset as, they can't get here from there because we can't get there from here.
Right. Well, we can't assume that they have the same limitations we do.
That's it.
I think you're right. That's what a lot of people want to assume, that want to write the whole thing off.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I think nobody can deny the fact that if a civilization was well in advance of ours, let's say thousands of years, they would certainly have extraordinary technology that we can't even conceive of now.
Right. And science tells us that we're a young solar system, a young planet, and, you know, compared to these others. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I think more and more people, even people in the scientific community, are willing to acknowledge that it's quite possible that there is life on other planets, and it is quite possible that these civilizations are more advanced than we are, and that they could have technology, you know, that's... And they are, you know, the scientists are finding more and more planets now that appear to have the possibility, anyway, of harboring life.
Yeah,
so we're learning more and more about how how many planets there are out there that resemble Earth.
Yeah, I liked that when the old Mars rover landed on Mars, and the camera panned down to the the foot of the rover, and somebody in NASA said it looks like it's in mud, but it can't be mud because there's no water on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
How could it be mud? You know, let's put that right out of our heads right now.
Right, right. I mean, you know. And then they eventually did find some water on the
anyway,
of Mars.
Lots of water. And evidence that there was a lot more water many years ago.
Too. Right.
So
right.
While we're on the subject of NASA, now NASA has said that they don't have any documentation to suggest that UFOs exist. Do you agree with that assessment?
I just have no way of knowing. I mean, I have to assume that they have lots of classified documents at NASA. And maybe some of them include reports on these objects. It's hard for me to believe, for instance, that they don't have some documentation on the Kecksburg UFO case, which took place in 1965, the crash in Pennsylvania. And that's why I filed a lawsuit against NASA and had this 7-year battle with them to try to get documents on that case.
Which you won.
It was settled in our favor. That's sort of how we're supposed to say it, as saying we won it. And
I see. Settled in our favor.
We received hundreds and hundreds of documents, but none of them pertain to the Kecksburg case. So I have to assume, since NASA's job during that period was to run around and pick up fallen space debris, you know, that witnesses saw NASA officials on the location there. They have to have had some involvement with this. And I mean, it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't have had filed something, and therefore, since we didn't receive it, you know, with a court order, I just have to assume that they must have it classified somewhere.
Was any of the documents you received have pages with redacted print?
There wasn't much, no. I mean, the only redactions, as I recall, were just names and addresses of people. There were some letters, for instance, that had been written by citizens. And they, just for privacy reasons, they redacted the names and addresses of people. But
okay.
Other than that,
yeah.
No, I don't think there were
not like
any. But, you know, they weren't terribly sensitive, the documents, so I'm not surprised.
No, okay.
There were some UFO case documents I received from the State Department files. But there weren't redactions in them. Yeah. So.
Not like the Stanton Friedman documents, huh?
Yeah, that's the famous one. No, nothing like that. Nothing like that.
Yeah. Now, also, Fife Symington, you met him. He's former governor of Arizona, and he claims to have witnessed the 1997 Phoenix Lights. Now, there's an example of a craft moving slowly from northern Arizona to southern Arizona.
Exactly, and it's a good point. We're talking about the things that move, massive things that move very slowly might be picked up as weather on radar. Who knows? Maybe that one would have been. One has to assume also that these things probably have stealth capacities.
Yeah.
I mean, we have stealth capacities for our aircraft, so certainly advanced technology is going to have it too. They may have, you know, all kinds of ways of avoiding radar, but
well, as low as this object was or objects were, wouldn't they be under the radar? Even
that's
if
that's another possibility. Yeah. I mean, but I think radar can pick up. I mean, it can even pick up things on the ground.
Yeah,
but it's not. They're not looking. That's the thing. They're not looking for something big and low to the ground.
Yeah,
and if they're not looking for it, they tend to not. You know, it'll read on the radar as something irrelevant to them. I mean, that seems to be the case, but I just don't know about the objects in Phoenix. I mean, certainly they were not picked up on radar, and for whatever reasons, you know.
They weren't picked up on radar, or they're not telling us that they were picked up
on
radar.
Well, I suppose that's a possibility.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, that's. I assume that's always a possibility. But
Vice Symington did witnesses. Now you've met him, right?
I've met him a couple of times, and we communicate pretty regularly. Yes, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he has great integrity. You know, and the fact that he for 10 years kept this under wraps, really. And while he was governor, as people know, you know, it was a very big event for the state of Arizona, this massive sighting that took place in March of 97. And he never told anyone that he had seen it also, and I'm sure a lot of people don't feel very good about it, and in retrospect, he doesn't either, but he sort of understands, you know, in the position that he was in political office, it's very hard for people to do, you know, to come out quotes. It would have been very hard for him as governor to say something, and he's explained in my book, he's actually written a piece in the book, and I also have some discussion, I've had long conversations with him, and I've described that as well in the book. He's explained why he didn't speak out about this, but he also explains that why he did yet later, which was partly to make amends with the constituents that were so upset by his press conference that he held, in which he had his chief of staff dressed up as an alien and kind of made fun of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really interesting story, I think, of a transformation from a man in political office who actually made fun of the subject, mm-hmm. made a joke out of it, to coming around 10 years later, acknowledging that he was a witness himself and actually becoming part of an effort to improve the government position on the subject matter. I mean, he's really willing to go to bat to help create changes within government on how they handle UFOs. So he has a very important role to play because he's been on both sides of the fence.
Mm.
He knows firsthand, you know, how difficult it is for any member, any elected official to deal with this subject matter while in office in the way that the government is handling it now.
Mm.
He sees the counterproductivity of that.
He didn't say, though, that someone approached him while governor and said, keep your mouth shut, Fife.
Absolutely not, no.
No.
And I don't believe that happened.
No.
And he nobody did that. Nobody told him to give the press conference. Nobody, you know, was looming over him and trying to control what he did or didn't do.
Right.
He was just operating sort of as the best way he felt he could in his position as governor.
Right, right.
And he did make inquiries, though, at high levels about what it could have been, and nobody knew.
Hmm.
I think the whole state was baffled by the thing.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he went to generals that he knew and people at the Air Force bases and the National Guard and, you know, asked a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And was not able, nobody knew what the thing was. So the way he describes it is they were as baffled as he was. So he was sort of stuck with no, and the federal government, of course, was not willing to be helpful at all.
Well, no, of course not.
Right, and that's what really doesn't make sense when you think about it, because something is intruding in our airspace for, you know, an hour and a half over major cities, and you just don't ignore it.
That's
the federal
right.
government should have stepped in.
Yeah, well, they say they didn't step in, they don't investigate these things, but especially after 9/11, you know, you report something is in our airspace like that, it picks up on radar, you see it, you got pictures, and you're not going, oh, that's one of those UFOs, we don't investigate that. I don't believe it. And if I did, I'd be very, very frightened that they didn't at least check it out.
I know. Well, I think you're right that after 9/11, maybe they would be more rigorous about it, but they certainly weren't in Arizona.
Yeah.
And that was before 9/11.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I've got to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves here in Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Ms. Leslie Kane, and she is the author of UFOs, among other things, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. See, I didn't say speak out. They go on the record. You were also a producer with James Fox of his documentary, I Know What I Saw. Did that evidence in the documentary prove eye-opening for you?
The evidence from James's documentary?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was all part of the process for me of learning, and, you know, that was the first time I ever met General Leti, for instance, was when I went with James to France, because we were doing some filming for his documentary, so that was wonderful for me. That was the first time I went to JPON, also the French government agency, and got to meet the officials there.
Mm.
So the whole process was really, it was, you know, I was very pleased to be involved with it. And I did learn a lot as we produced that film.
Yeah. We've had James on.
And, of course, the press conference, that was the main thing. I mean, the whole film was built around the 2007 press conference, and
which
I co-organized with James.
Yes,
so,
yes.
I think that was, for me, that was the most important aspect of the film, was really the fact that this, just documenting the press conference, which I thought was a very important event.
Right. Yeah, we've had James on the show twice now, and he's an excellent guest. Those documentaries are excellent documentaries. Speaking of documentaries, you don't have any idea when this documentary that you've been involved in about your book is going to be aired?
Well, it's I think it's just so people know, this is a documentary that is going to be aired on the History Channel, and it's being made by an independent film company called Breakthrough Films, and I've known the people in that company for many years, and they're really, really good filmmakers. And they were commissioned by the History Channel to do a documentary, two-hour special, actually, sort of jumping off of my book and working on the same premise as the book. And in terms of the air date, I think it'll be in the summer sometime.
Okay.
The film needs to be handed into the channel by May, and so we're still shooting it now, and there's going to be the post-production editing process. It'll take some time. And then it will be turned over to History Channel, and I don't know how long their turnover time is once they receive it in terms of when they will air it. So my guess is late spring, early summer, something like that.
Yeah. Now, that you speak of the press conference, the 2010 press conference with UFOs and nukes.
Yeah. Well, that's another important press conference.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the one I was referring to earlier was the 2007 one that I did with James Fox.
Right.
But,
were you involved with this 2010?
No, I wasn't directly involved, no. But I certainly have spoken with Robert Hastings over the years and was, you know, certainly encouraged him to do this. And
it's funny you should mention him.
I think it was a great event. I'm really glad that they did it.
He will be our guest next month.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, he's got some fascinating material to share with people. So,
well, since that, those two press conferences, the 2007, the 2010, now the release of your book, now it seems that, I don't know if the release of your book had anything to do with it, but this Maslin Othman, they put her as the head of the newly founded United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs. And a lot of mainstream reporters are now treating the subject with a surprising amount of respect. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I kind of think this summer that was happening a bit more. I mean, the United Nations thing, of course, it was a little bit overblown by the media in terms of what, you know, was actually being expected of her, but it was all straightened out, and you know, I agree. I mean, I think there were some other events that happened. You know, there were a lot of things that happened in the summer and the fall, which did receive, I think there's some of the discoveries that were made about exoplanets, and gosh, I can't remember, but I know that there have been lots of events that have happened, and I think the press has been very curious and very respectful, as you said.
Yeah,
I think that there's much less ridicule now than there used to be in the media of the subject matter. I really think that that's the case.
Yeah, I know. You know, on Fox News, I even hate to mention Fox News, but what's his name? Shepard Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, difficult name to remember. Smith. But at any rate, when the first one, I believe it was 2007, a Disclosure Project in 2001. He had to give this talk about it on the show, on his news broadcast. But he made a lot of fun of the Disclosure Project. And now he's kind of changing his tune a bit, you know? And a lot of them are changing their tune.
Well, and I think part of the problem was that there were some witnesses at the Disclosure Project press conference presented who should not have been presented. There were people that said things that were way over the top, if you want to use that expression, in terms of what is appropriate to say to media and what you need to say in terms of encouraging people to take the subject seriously. I think you have to be very careful what you put out there, and I think there was some testimony at the press conference that was just not really the best kind of material to present, and therefore it may have led to some of that ridicule. But
like what?
I also think time has helped. And I think you're right about Fox, for instance. I mean, I was on Fox television 3 times since the book came out.
Mm-hmm.
They gave my book and the subject matter more coverage than any other network did.
Really?
Yeah, and MSNBC was the other network that did a lot of coverage on it. But they're both, that's a cable network. So,
well, that's a feather in their cap anyway.
Yeah, I think Fox News is very interested in the, Fox stations in general are interested in the subject matter and are really willing to take it seriously. And that's what they certainly did that on the 3 times that I was on their shows. They were very respectful and interested
in the book. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
Back 10 years ago, 9 years ago, they weren't respectful of it. They wanted to make fun of it and, you know, tee-hee and what have you. Sure, this can't be. And now today, their attitude's changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so. But I think the book, you know, I have to say that I think this book really lends itself to that kind of coverage because there's just nothing in the book that really lends itself to being anything that anybody can ridicule.
Right, right.
And when you have, you know, 5 generals writing their own pieces, and you have a former governor of the state of Arizona, and you have John Podesta, Clinton's former chief of staff, writing a foreword to a book, it's much harder to ridicule it than it is to take some testimony at a press conference where a guy's talking about alien bodies or, you know, all kinds of weird stuff.
But see, that goes right along with it. That's the thing. When you open the door and you say these things are real, then people are, well, wait a minute, what about the beings that pilot them?
Yeah, they can ask the question, but I think you have to be careful not to talk about, I mean, I'm being very careful anyway, not to, to bring that subject up at all. If they want to ask about it, fine, but you don't go
out
there
and say... You don't have to answer
say,
it, right?
Huh?
But you don't have to answer it, right?
Well, you can find an answer that is appropriate, but you know, you don't include that in the material that you're putting out.
Right.
That's my point. I mean, at a Washington, D.C. press conference, when you're trying to get the national media to pay attention to the UFO phenomenon, you have to be very careful not to put out material that is just, you know, you have to put out the most simple, basic material and just make
right.
the point that UFOs exist and not
right.
go beyond that, because that's step number one, and
yes.
they haven't even gotten that yet.
Right.
So if you start talking about, you know, all kinds of other issues related to it, such as crashes with bodies and this and that, they're just not going to handle it. They're just going to say, wait a minute, this is way too crazy, and they're going to laugh about it. But if you have just government officials and high-level military saying there's a physical phenomenon that we can't identify,
right.
that's something that the media is not going to laugh at, and they're going to be able to
right.
manage without feeling they have to ridicule it. So I think part of it really is about what material you put out, what you give them.
Yeah.
And they are going to take certain kinds of material more seriously than they're going to take other kinds of material. That's just the way it is.
And if not extraterrestrial, then what, right?
Yeah, and you can certainly make the statement that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is valid, but if you just keep it at the level of a hypothesis
right.
and acknowledge that we don't know yet,
right.
and to try to invite the U.S. government to become more involved rather than accusing them of doing bad things for 50 years, I think it's strategically much sounder, and this is, again, I have many advisors that have helped me come to this position. I'm not just doing this on my own.
Right.
It's strategically sounder, and you're going to get more likely to get better results if you approach the United States with an invitation that they could find enticing,
right?
Rather
right.
than coming from the position of accusing them and beating them over the head for something they've done bad in the last 50 years and saying, you know, you've got to cover up and this and that. They're just going to run away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can make it interesting to them and make them feel that we need them in some kind of international movement because they're so important and they have so much knowledge and so many resources that we need you to help us out, it's just more likely to succeed than the other approach, which is more accusatory. So
you catch more flies with sugar than you can with molasses, huh?
You said it all there in about one sentence. That's a perfect way to describe it.
That's right.
Absolutely. That's the way I see it anyway.
That's right. No, you're right there. But you refer to yourself as an agnostic on the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And after all the research that went into your book and into the press conference and what have you, has this information swayed you in either way?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to clarify, I'm not an agnostic on the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, again, I would completely agree that the hypothesis is a valid one, but again, it's a hypothesis. What I mean by that when I say I'm an agnostic, I know it's sort of a confusing concept, but it has to do with on actually knowing what UFOs are. And so I'm taking the position that we don't yet know 100% for sure in terms of scientific investigations and, you know, that meet scientific standards. We don't know yet what they are. So what I mean by agnostic is I'm taking that position that we still need to find out what UFOs actually are. But in terms of the hypothesis, I'm not an agnostic. I certainly think that hypothesis is valid, just like the generals in my book do. I mean, I have no, you know, and that it's a very likely explanation for the objects is this extraterrestrial hypothesis. So the agnosticism just comes on assuming that we know what they are when we don't yet really know.
Right.
Because a lot of people just assume, a lot of people in the UFO community are, you know, have no problem stating publicly that they are extraterrestrial. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can make that statement yet.
But
don't have quite enough information.
They seem to be intelligently controlled.
And that's true, too. I mean, everything points to the extraterrestrial explanation, without a doubt. And, you know, Colonel Holt from Rendlesham Forest, from the Bentwaters case, made that statement in his piece in my book that he has no doubt that they were under intelligent control.
Yeah.
And other people have as well, who have other military and Air Force people who have engaged these objects in flight and so on.
Mm.
You know, there's many cases of them responding to the behaviors of humans, which, you know, indicates intelligent control without a doubt. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're left with sort of a problem. Well, what could they be? There aren't that many options.
Right. Yeah, I think if they were not under intelligent control, I believe that we have brought them down. They're just not telling us what they brought down. But if they were not extraterrestrial and not anything to worry about, they could bring them down easily and tell the public, look, I brought it down, this is what it was, go back to sleep, you know?
Yeah, that's true. If it was some kind of a drone or something that was that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, they do seem to be able to maneuver in ways that allow them to stay away from being detected too much and allow them to get away and move away and do what they need to do. So,
now, what do you hope ultimately happens as a result of your book?
Well, I mean, first of all, I hope that lots of people will read it, and, you know, especially the sort of skeptical types of people who might not normally read a UFO book, I hope that this will sort of open them up to this reality and something they haven't really considered before. And, of course, I hope that policymakers and government officials and so on will read it. And then after I've been working very hard on just getting it out there, and then the second phase for me is to work on getting some kind of structural change to happen within the U.S. government. I mean, that's really what's most important to me. And it's really why I wrote the book, to try to effect a policy change within the U.S. government that will allow it to become part of an international investigation into this phenomenon. And we've proposed one way of doing that in the book, which is to have a small government office set up as sort of a focal point for UFO investigations, similar to what they have in France. So I'm working on something, on trying to facilitate that and to make that happen. And that's really what I hope will happen more than anything else with regard to this.
Have you sent any copies to the White House?
Not directly. I mean, there are people in important places that have received copies through individuals that know them, kind of thing.
Right.
And that sort of way I think is more effective to do it rather than just sort of sending them. But they're being distributed around, you know, through people that have access to important people. So,
cool.
That is happening. And some people have contacted me. For instance, congressional aide has contacted me from somebody's office who's on an important committee. And so there are people in Washington that are interested in this, and we're moving. We're moving towards making change.
That's great.
What's really the most important thing to me about the effect that the book can have is to have it lead to something like that. Right. So
well, the book is called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. Leslie Kane, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, David, thank you so much for having me, and I want to wish you a happy new year and all your listeners a happy new year, and let's hope we have lots of progress in this new year.
I'm
with
you.
Issue that we all care so much about.
I'm with you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, David. Bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, at UFOimplications.com. That's UFOimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Hello. Magic notebook. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, all right, we got this. All right. You're listening to WHFR, Dearborn, 89.3, or WHFR.FM. If you're listening from the internet, this is the only station making waves. This is Jimmy. You're here with me, floating in a tin can. I am your non-resident spaceman. Unfortunately, I really haven't been so glad to get through. The past two times, I haven't really been able to. I not even sure what happened. Everything was normal, and I, you know, flip the switch and hit the buttons, and for a good 2 hours I'm sitting there saying, can you hear me now? 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 And the magical notebook is, you know, asking me where I am. And now I'm looking at the magical notebook and it's like, oh, did someone come and get you? No one came and got me. That's no good.